Good afternoon. My name is Joe Belfiore, and I'm a VP in our operating system group. Now we call it WDG, Windows and Devices Group. And I'm responsible for the part of Windows which defines its experience on PCs, tablets, and phones. You all generally know the idea about Windows. We have a common core operating system that goes underneath all kinds of devices, Xbox, HoloLens, but also PCs, tablets, and phones. And the way we're organized tries to ensure that each device category will have a great device-specific experience. And I'm focused on the PC, the tablet, and phone. Now, actually, your timing here today is, it's unbelievably good for me. In fact, I've had a long career at Microsoft. I've been at Microsoft 25 years. I hit my 25-year anniversary this summer. It's crazy. And ironically today, if you happened, and I'm sure you did not, but if you happened to be like, oh, who's the speaker that we're getting? Who's this Joe Belfiore guy? If you happen to do a Bing search today, you ran across some interesting news about me today. To save you the trouble, here's an example of what you might have found today. Because in honor of Back to the Future Day, we decided that we would let our teams know I am actually going to take a 9-month leave of absence from Microsoft. And so you're saying to yourself, well, wait a minute, how is this like good timing today for you to be hearing from me? Like, here's this guy, he's the walking dead. We don't want a zombie guy who's out of here giving this presentation, because you want somebody who's a long-termer going to be in. Look, I'm taking a leave of absence. I'm going to go spend time. This is true. I'm going to go spend time with my family for real. I have a son who's a sixth grader and twin girls who are second graders. I've been at Microsoft for 25 years without taking time off. I've been killing myself on Windows phones for the last 6.5 years. I've been working on Windows 10 for PCs, tablets, and phones for the last 2 years. We needed to get the start menu back. We needed to get some great stuff like a Cortana personal digital assistant in there. We needed to go solve for enterprise deployment. All of that work is nearly done. So I'm going to go get on a boat for a while. Why is this good news for you? Because I am feeling both goofy and generous. Like, I'm gonna be out of here. What have I got to lose, right? So your timing is good. And you know, you're expecting you're gonna come here and you're gonna hear another big, long, boring, dry conversation about a bunch of enterprise stuff. I have to do some of that, admittedly. But instead, I figured since I'm gonna be taking off, let's spend a little bit of time on some geek trivia. So, how many of you have a pen-enabled Surface or other? Yes? Okay, get your touch-enabled devices ready with OneNote, because we're going to do 3 geek trivia questions. And this will be more fun than just a boring old talk. And speed will be of the essence. So what I want you to do, I'm going to show you a question. I want you to figure it out. You've seen Geeks Who Drink or heard of Geeks Who Drink, same idea, no drinking. Although, you know, if you're drinking, that's up to you. You write your answer down and then hold your tablet up quickly, and I'm going to be trying to do my best to scan the audience and see who is both fast and correct. Okay, are you ready? You ready? Question number 1 in geek trivia. Here we go. Question 1. The number of stars in our solar system plus the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Write it down and hold up your tablets. Okay, we got an answer there that's wrong. That was fast, but wrong. Fast, but wrong. Fast, but wrong.
42.
Fast, but wrong. I don't see anybody with the right answer. I'll give you a hint. 42 is incorrect. I can't see it. Can you, what does it say? One is it? Who said 43? 43 is the correct answer. I was going to write it down myself, but I didn't. I was too busy tracking you. How many stars in our solar system? 1, and the answer to life, the universe, 42. So the answer is 43. Who was that? Can you just stand up for a second? Jeez, I need to be able to see. What's your first name?
Ian.
Ian, can you look back there? There's Wendy. Wendy's my chief of staff. Ian, you just won a Surface Pro 4. I told you to get ready. The good news is there's not only one question. Okay, so if you were still doing your email or browsing the web, now you should wake up, because you know there are Surface Pro 4s available here. Okay, we got 2 more. Question 2, are you ready? Here we go. Question two. The number of lightsabers in the chronologically first Star Wars movie plus the number of buttons on the Surface Pro 3 pen. Okay, like, who said six? I heard a... We got a six right here in the front row. I was going to write mine down. Six is the correct answer. Six is the correct answer. Can you stand up? What's your name?
Randy.
Randy, turn around and wave to Wendy. Surface Pro 4. I realize as the host, I need to be a little more on the ball here because probably someone back there is thinking, I got that faster, and he wasn't paying attention. Okay, question three. Are you ready? Isn't this better than just a boring old presentation? Question three, here we go. If you were to print each piece of feedback we received while building Windows 10 and stack them, they would be taller than A, the Great Pyramid, B, the Space Needle, or C, the... I heard a C from back over there, right there. That was my first C. Can you stand up there? Go ahead. What's your name?
Vance,
turn around and wave to Wendy. Surface Pro 4. Unfortunately, I only have three questions, and we have to do a little bit of work here. We'll have a tiny bit more fun later, but a little bit of work here. The amount of feedback we got was taller than the Empire State Building. That's 6 million pieces of feedback, and I'm going to use that as a segue into actually being serious for a little while. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what we've been trying to do with Windows 10. I'm going to do a quick demo, and then we'll do Q&A, and you can ask me about anything you want, including my leave of absence and whether I'm really coming back or, you know, anything. Like, today's the day to ask your crazy questions. As you all know, with Windows 10, we really changed the approach that we were taking in developing operating systems. And a big part of what we tried to do was to have a transparent development process where we engaged our audiences early and often. And the biggest part of that was the way that we deployed builds throughout the entire development process. We did it on the PC first, we're doing it on PC and phone now. People on Xboxes are getting early builds of the new Xbox experience with Windows 10 underneath, so that we have a feedback pipeline that we develop, invest in. And it's interesting because a lot of the way that we went about doing the engineering was about evolving the what our historic test organization was to become less about manually writing tests that try to simulate the real world, and instead doing engineering that helps you gather data about the real world. And the reason why this is such a significant thing is that our entire ability to deliver a quality product, and I say the word quality meaning both the way end users would rate it on a scale, we now track our NPS, Net Promoter Score, finding out how many people would recommend the product they got. That's an important definition of quality. But also quality in the classic engineering sense, we've always tracked how many bugs are there crashes, are there data loss issues. And rather than approximate the real world, which is incredibly difficult to do, we simply get data from the real world. And this change in engineering process has been a huge deal for us. We think it has been a big part of the reason why Windows 10 has landed as favorably as it has so far, because for us, there just haven't been surprises. We had, I think we announced 7 million insider users out there on every kind of device you can imagine, using tons and tons of different apps. So we had real world data about what things worked, what things didn't, both subjectively from end users and sort of objectively via telemetry pipelines that we built into the product. And our whole go forward model for how we'll service Windows and provide updates, all the things that you've already learned about with the Windows Update branch for business, benefiting from millions and millions of users out there using the PC or the phone or the Xbox, is all part of the methodology that's going to help us improve quality. Now, overall, since we launched in July, beginning of August, we now have over 110 million PCs running Windows 10. We announced that number, 110 million, at the beginning of October when we did our device hardware launch. And not only have we seen a lot of end users get on the product, we also have looked at the telemetry from them. We know they're a very satisfied audience. Our uninstall rate is super low. It's been around 4%. It gets lower than 4%. Uninstall is incredibly easy. I hope you've never needed to try it. Shockingly, the uninstall of Windows 10 is far easier than the install of Windows 10. You can uninstall in like 2 minutes and you're back to your previous installation. And so even with it being so easy, the uninstall rate is quite low. And we've seen the press be very positive on the operating system, and then we feel fortunate that we have had a wave of positive press that came out of the device launch that we did at Microsoft and that we did partnering with our hardware OEMs. You've seen the last few weeks have been, I just came back from San Francisco. I was with Lenovo on Monday showing their two new devices. We had a whole range of hardware announcements, and this is, from our point of view, the process working. Satisfied end users, good telemetry, good press, and now we're moving with the device ecosystem there as well. I mentioned this already. We have a visual. I'm not sure I have any more to add to this, except that our philosophy is that when we build Windows, we build it across this wide range of devices. The one aspect of this that I will underscore that I didn't already mention is that a particularly intentional part of the strategy, I talked about this whole idea of telemetry and the way we're going to measure quality. All of these devices benefit from each other's volume in that method. As we tune the security or reliability or performance of something like the networking stack, every device benefits. The other key strategy idea behind this concept is the notion that the developer platform is leveraged across a really wide range of devices. As I said, I spent a lot of years working on phone, and the hardest thing for us with phone has been not being in the virtuous cycle of high volume of devices begetting developers writing a lot of apps, begetting more device sales. When you're not in that cycle, it's incredibly difficult to make progress. The network effects are powerful. We benefited from them over many years on the PC. Now our competition in mobile benefits from them, and that's a tough uphill battle for us. Part of the point of this approach is that as a developer, if you write for Windows, you write your app once to the universal Windows platform, and then you make a decision about how much additional work you want to choose to do to adapt for the other form factors. You don't have to do any. Your app will run. So for example, if you put on a HoloLens, you can run the Word mobile app, and you see it exist as a square, and it doesn't do holographic things. If the developer of the app wants to do a little extra work, they can adapt to the holographic environment. Same is true of the phone, and I'll give you a demo of where this really pays off. So for the developer, what you get is you write once for Windows. Mostly you'll target our highest volume device, the PC. But the app that you've already written will self-adapt to phones, it'll self-adapt to the Xbox, it'll self-adapt to HoloLens, and you can be on all those devices. Now, this gives end user benefit too, and it's worth getting you to think about this a little bit. The reason that I run a group called PC, Tablet, and Phone, and my peer Phil Spencer runs a group for Xbox, and my peer Alex Kitman runs a group for HoloLens, instead of having one person running phone and one person running PC, we put them together in my group. And that was intentional because, in our view, there really is a continuum of device experiences that move smoothly from a 4-inch phone to a 7-inch tablet. Those are both touch devices, right? But you know, maybe you'll connect a keyboard to that 7-inch tablet sometimes, maybe 5% of the time. But then if it's an 11 or 12-inch tablet, maybe it's got a keyboard attached to it 65% of the time and no keyboard 35% of the time. How do you build that user experience? And then when I get up to a 27-inch all-in-one, you know, maybe I want to take one of those devices and flatten it and use it with a pen or use it as a touch device or take it off its stand and carry it into the couch. Our OEMs are building these devices. We fundamentally believe that the notion of a user experience that it should flex, that you should be able to take a small device that is great for its portability, and that's in your pocket, bring it to a place where you dock it to a keyboard, mouse, and large screen, and not just get sort of suspect benefits of apps that weren't designed for that form factor, but get full benefits. And this platform approach delivers on that idea. So when a developer writes their app for the PC, what that implies is it works great with a keyboard, it knows about the mouse, the tab key will move a focus rectangle around a dialog box, and you know, obscure things like holding down the control key and doing left arrow with the shift button depressed will select words. I mean, this is obscure, but I pretty much guarantee that all of you have wired into your brains insane keyboard shortcuts that you expect to work when you're on a keyboard like that. This platform delivers that benefit. You write the app once, for the PC, but when that same code is running on a phone, it knows how to do all those things. So this idea is good for developers, it's good for OEMs, and it's good for end users, and it gives you a sense of what our philosophy is. The main thing that I hope you'll take away today is that besides the broad sort of operating system strategy that we've put in place here, we've been pretty focused on making sure Windows, PCs in particular, phones as well, all these devices are great for business and for the enterprise. And I would highlight four key things. In particular, we're talking about PCs and phones as well, tablet devices. The first is a big push for us in Windows 10 was making users more productive. And I'm not going to talk about that now. You know all the work we've done there, bringing the start menu back, adding things like the Notification Center, Cortana, powerful searching, multiple desktops, a lot of great work that is going to make users satisfied and more productive. We've put a lot of focus on modern security threats. And there's a range of things we've done there. I'm going to show you Windows Hello in just a minute and how Windows Hello coupled with the idea of removing the need for typed passwords, where a biometric authentication happens on the device and then that authentication is passed on the service, that helps to helps you avoid having text passwords stored on a server somewhere, which can get compromised and then it compromises your whole network. So that's an example of a security focus that we've had. Another example, we're doing a bunch of work on a feature we call EDP, or Enterprise Data Protection, which helps the IT administrator set policy for a given user and given app that the data created by it is business data, easily shareable among people within the business, but encrypted if it tries to go outside the business. We've tried to make that smooth and easy to use. Devices I won't spend time talking about. I think I've hit that point enough. And then last, we're trying to make sure that the way we build the software enables us and you to deploy it in a way that delivers productivity, lower cost, and just delights users. And so there's a wide range of things we've done here. Part of that is our servicing approach and the notion of us testing our fixes with increasing rings of users before you deploy it within your company. It also implies things like dynamic provisioning, where a user within your company can buy a PC or be authorized to choose a PC, sign into Azure Active Directory, and then all the right provisioning stuff just comes from the cloud. You never need to touch the PC. So those are the four things that I hope you will take away. And I'm going to do a couple of quick demos of some of this stuff in case you haven't seen it. The first one I want to show you is Windows Hello. And Windows Hello is about, hey, look at that. That's my family looking out into the ocean. Sort of an appropriate picture. Windows Hello is about both the end user benefit of your device recognizing you and giving you an effortless way to start using your PC, but also it's part of the backbone idea behind beginning to enable the infrastructure that lets passwords not be stored in the network so they can't be stolen. So here's my PC. This is a new Lenovo Yoga ThinkPad 15. And it has in it an Intel RealSense camera. So this is a real device. You can buy it today. A bunch of the devices that just got announced have support for this Windows Hello. The reason it's signed in is that if I had it not signed in, the demo would go by so fast you wouldn't even see it happen. So what I'm going to do is lock the PC, but I have to stand over here. There's Windows Hello in action. The camera is engaged. All I need to do is move in front of it, and it's done. That's it. That's the demo. It's super fast. It's super easy. Thank you. As you saw, hardware is shipping with this, so the PCs that you get now do that. We think in homes it'll make families better able to take advantage of features in Windows, like, you know, being able to set what your kids can do. And within a business, it helps you move along the path of avoiding the typing of passwords using biometric authentication. And it's built on part of the platform that also works with thumbprint identification as well, and we're seeing devices start to do that. Okay, so that's Windows Hello. It's a super fast demo. The second thing I want to show you is how the combination of the developer platform and this notion of Windows across devices gives you that end user benefit I described, which we characterize as a feature called Continuum. And the idea is that with Windows, your devices and your apps will flex to meet and take advantage of the screen size, keyboard, mouse, touch input that's available. So let's switch over to my second demo PC here. So here I've got a Surface Pro, I think this is Surface Pro 3. And I'm running Windows 10. Many of you have seen it, played with it before. You know, here's the start menu. It pops up like a menu. I'm going to open some apps. I've got the Edge browser. Here's a Win32 app, the File Explorer. We'll bring up Word and Excel. I want you to, just for a second, take a look at this Excel screen. Get in your mind what it looks like. Just remember that. We'll come back to that. Here is Calendar, the built-in calendar, and the built-in mail app, okay? So I've got all these apps. The examples I picked have all been written to the Universal Windows platform except for that Win32 File Explorer. And you're all familiar with this feature already. I showed you the start menu. Here I am, I'm using it in windowing mode. I use all my keyboard shortcuts, and when I remove the keyboard and mouse, it prompts, do you want to switch to tablet mode? I'll say yes. And now the UI has adapted to this mode of use, which is touch-based. And so when I click the Start button, I get the full screen version of Start. This button here helps me discoverably switch between my tasks. When I go to Excel, I get Excel. And now I'm in full screen tablet mode. So you all have seen that before, right? That's not new information. That's Continuum on the PC. But what I really want to show you is Continuum on the phone. This one, a lot fewer people have seen in a lot less detail. So this right here, can we get this? This is the new... this is the small version of our Lumia 950, I think it's called, 950. And, you know, it's a nice phone. It's running Windows 10 for phones. And you can see here's my start menu. But you might have noticed we already have it plugged in. This is the Microsoft Display Dock. And this is going to be available with the phone. And what I've done is I've plugged in. And I don't have to do this via wires. I can. It's most performant when I do, and I get charging in this mode. I've plugged the phone in. I plugged in a screen, a mouse, a keyboard. It could be Bluetooth. It could be Miracast. It doesn't need wires. But you'll notice, because I plugged it in, I've already been using this. Up here in the top, it says tap to control the screen. So I'm going to click that. There we go. And the phone actually can also act as the mouse. So let's say I didn't have a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse or a wired keyboard and mouse. You see here when I move my, can you see both? I don't know if you can zoom in there so they can see the mouse pointer. See when I move my finger on here, it's moving the mouse pointer on there? My phone just turned into a trackpad. So now we have the screen of the phone being part of the experience on the quote unquote PC, but there is no PC. Or I can put the phone down and just use the mouse and the keyboard. So I'll wait till they get that up on screen. So now I am using a phone, okay? There's no PC here. This is a phone. I have to keep reminding you of that because when you look at it, you're going to say, boy, it feels like a PC. When I go here and click the start menu, here's my start menu. This is my phone start menu. It's the same start menu with the same tile layout that I had on my phone. It's completely familiar to me. If I've been using the phone, then I attach to the screen. I'm now using the start menu here. Let me launch some apps. I'm going to pick... Where's Photos? Here's Photos. I'm going to go into the Photos app on the phone. Now, when I run the Photos app on the phone, it looks like a Photos app for the phone. This is the exact same code running. This app was written to our Universal Windows platform, and it adapts its UI based on the device that it's running on and or the screen and keyboard and all those things that are available. This app knows it's running on a big screen, so it takes advantage of the layout and it gets large. Down here, you'll notice, as I'm running apps, I'll pick another example. Let's go in here. I haven't tried this one. The demo team's probably going to yell at me. I'm going to try the Edge browser. Okay, that one didn't work. I'm going to try it one more time because I'm just feeling like I should try it. Okay, Edge browser's not going to work on this build. Sorry. Let's go down here and we'll pick Excel. You see Excel is running down here? I'm going to switch over and there's Excel. Remember I showed you Excel on the PC? It basically looks identical here because it's the same code. The experience literally is identical. That's part of the whole point of the platform running across all of these things. Remember, this is a phone. So if I want to go here to the total and get a grand total, I can come up here and use the familiar auto sum button. And sure enough, it does what you expect. Also, if I use the keyboard, I can move around with my arrow keys and do all this sort of stuff. And then you think about, like, if you're really in the PC zone using the PC, all these muscle memory things come to play. Like, if I have the mouse going and I go to the upper right corner, I expect to be able to minimize. Well, you can. I expect to be able to go up here and minimize. Well, you can. I expect to come down here to the task bar and task switch. Well, you can. The task switcher that I showed you before, well, we have that here too. So if I want to switch between one app and the other, it works in a natural way, consistent with the experience I might have had if I bought this big, fancy, expensive device or this smaller, also fancy device. But remember, this is a phone. Let me give you a couple last examples, and I'll wrap this up and go on to Q&A. Let me launch Mail. One of the cool things about the built-in Mail app is that it has Word embedded in as its text editor. So This is the mail app, same app you saw before. I can click on messages. I'm going to come up here and say reply all. Oh, man. I'm having some bad demo luck here. I'm going to try that again. No, I'm not. Okay, unfortunately, oh, here we go. Try it again. Okay, here we are. So this is Word as the editor built right into the mail app. And so one of these nice things happens, which I characterized for you earlier. If I just type as I would on a PC device, all the things I'm used to just work. So you saw some of the autocorrect happening. I'm going to hold down Shift and Control. Some of you will know this. Some of you don't do this. I do this all the time. Left arrow selects by word. It's super handy. Or if you're navigating the cursor, Control right arrow selects by word. So if you want to select lines, you do Shift, Control, down arrow, and you get selection by lines. No developer had to do extra work for that to happen correctly on a phone device, because for Windows, the platform is unified across all devices, and when developers write those apps, those user experience benefits come along as part of it. So let me send this, and then I'll try one last example. We'll see here if I can do this. I'll run calendar, and you'll see here's the calendar running on the phone, looking like the... Oh, well, that's convenient. I'm getting a phone call. And I want to show this to you because this is my phone, the screen still works independently. It's Wendy. Hello. Right now? Okay, I'll tell him. Bye. So that was Wendy. You saw my phone still works independently as a phone. I can use this screen. I could still use this screen up here. Wendy wanted me to tell you. She's telling me I'm running late. I'm supposed to leave time for Q&A. I didn't. I'll try to do some. She figured out a way that we would give Surface Pro 4s to all of you. So for those of you, turn back there and wave to Wendy. Thank you, Wendy. So for those of you who are, you know, feeling like I was really terrible and not answering, finding the right people, she solved the problem. I was going to do a quick recap of this. I have just a few minutes left. I'm going to skip it and do a Q&A if you guys have any questions you'd like me to answer. Go ahead. Thank you for asking that. His question was, where am I going? We're going to take our kids out of school starting mid-November, and the timing is intentional. It's been interesting because I'm reading these posts like, this guy's leaving right in the middle. No, we're finishing. We obviously finished the PC release and shipped it. We're finishing mobile and a pretty significant revision of the desktop release. We're finishing up right now. We're not quite done yet, but we're almost done. I'm going to take my kids on this thing called Semester at Sea. It's funny because I sent mail inside the group yesterday and told people I'm learning of all these people who work at Microsoft that have done it. I've never done it. It's literally a college campus. This nonprofit has a partnership with the University of Virginia. So it will be 650 college students there taking actual college classes. And then apparently one deck of the ship is where they house the faculty. And then they sell the rest of the cabins to adult passengers and their families. That's what we're doing. So we get to audit college classes, but we don't have to if we don't want to. The ship leaves from San Diego in early January and goes west and ends in London in the spring. And we're going to tack some U.S. travel on the front. My kids have never been to Washington, D.C. or New York. And it feels funny to go, you know, visit all these world cities without going. So we're going to go there first, then do the ship. Then spend some time in London, and I will be back in the summer. And I'm coming back. So, next question. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm excited. Yeah, go ahead.
So, well, one of the things I've noticed, especially with the cabling problem with PCs and all the connection, all the connection stuff. You got HDMI with multiple channels coming out of the devices, and we still have to connect another USB cable to keep the touch running. Why didn't we just integrate it right into the single connector that still has excess capacity?
That's a good question. I am not a deep hardware connectivity expert. I speculate that there are newer connectors that do that, although I don't know the specifics of it. If you send me mail, I will find somebody who will get you the right answer. I'm JoeB@Microsoft.com. You only have a few weeks left, though. Next. Over there. Sure.
You talked about the challenges in the phone business. You know, you got to have a lot of devices to get the code, blah, blah, blah. And you've talked about the fact that this, using the strategy of write for the PC, it'll run on the phone. So what are you seeing in the initial results? Are you getting there or not?
Right now, I'd say it's still pretty darn early. I mean, we first launched on the PC July 29th. I think if you were to ask most people, it'd be interesting to see whether you guys had the same opinion yourself. Most people would say that our install rate, the ramp of user growth for Windows 10, is faster than they would have expected. So we're not even 3 months in yet, and we're north of 100 million. I think if most people were predicting, they would have predicted slower growth. And so if you're a software developer and you're kind of deciding whether you're going to write your app for this new Windows platform that Microsoft is talking about, you probably have not done most of the work yet. And so if you look in the store, there are hundreds of apps that are written to this new platform. There are not yet thousands. It's possible the number is in the thousands now since the last time I checked. But the ramp is just beginning. The thing that I've learned, and I've met with a ton of independent software developers, companies like Facebook, Instagram, before they were part of Facebook, Snapchat, like all these guys, Twitter, I've met with a ton of them. And they are very motivated, unsurprisingly, by volume engagement, which will drive their revenue. And so I think we're in a period right now where people are going to see, they're going to wait and see. How many users are there? Are they engaging with apps in the store? And then, from our point of view, all those metrics look quite good. It'll just be a matter of time before apps are showing up and taking advantage of the platform. At our device day, Terry was on stage, and he announced a number of app vendors that have committed to writing apps for this platform. Facebook was one of them, and they were specific. They said they were going to do the Facebook app, the Instagram app, Facebook Messenger. I can't remember. I want to say there was one other, but I don't remember. And so we're optimistic. We think the strategy will work. But time will tell. Who else? Sure, right there.
I'm interested just when someone in your position leaves the company for such a long time, how does that work? And how does Microsoft, you know, what's the plan there?
So it was funny because the day, like I had been, first this was just an idea, then it was an idea that had legs, and then I went and had the conversation with Terry. And there are many aspects of what you could be asking. The way we're going to handle it is so I had this conversation with Terry. Here's what I want to do personally. He couldn't argue, you know, my personal values and deciding this is important. It's hard to say to somebody who's been here for 25 years and not done this, no, don't go take some time and spend it with your kids while they're young. So Terry was immediately completely supportive. He talked to Satya and some other senior people at Microsoft, and they very quickly came back and said, yes, we think this is a great idea, we're supportive. And the way we've been addressing how to deal with me not being here, part of it is the timing that I'm going. There's a wave of work that we're finishing, and the planning for the next wave of work is already well underway. And the planning cycle that we use, a big part of the planning cycle that we use, is that we thoughtfully write and publish a document that articulates a bunch of the things that we want to make as our primary investments in the next wave. Well, I worked on that a lot, and it's been done for a little while. And we're now in the part of that planning process, which is to focus on the feasibility of these things, make some progress, you know, get a little more depth understanding about whether they're good ideas or bad ideas. We start getting some feedback. And that's where we're at in the process on that now. And the way Terry characterized it, which I think is right, like Microsoft has this value system that supports its employees. And there's an example of a situation like this that comes up regularly. And that is when a senior woman has a baby and goes on parental leave, or if a male, their family has a baby and goes on parental leave. And generally, the way that's handled, the job is held open, and the community of people around that job all step up in ways that you plan to fill the gap, and then the person comes back. And that's how we're doing it. So, you know, there's some people in my team that are, you know, one person's going to take my spot as, we have this process called DCRs, design change requests. and you vote on whether you're going to take them or not. One of the people on my team who has similar values and sensibilities to me is going to take my spot to do that. And somebody else is going to run the weekly meeting. And so it's, you know, sort of the logistics that you would expect. The thing that's been great from my perspective is how immediately and completely Microsoft was supportive of the idea. It was great. Anybody else? Oh, one right here. Yeah.
What was the biggest surprise in Windows 10 that you heard from the development community?
Biggest surprise in Windows 10 that we heard from the development community. I think it's hard for me to answer that because so much of the process was designed for you to know stuff before you got to the end. You know what I mean? I'll try to think of some surprises about how the rollout has happened. Actually, the pace has been a surprise. The growth rate has been faster than we predicted. China has been tougher than we predicted. So that's been a little bit of a surprise. I think in all these things, you make your best guess. There are things that you can anticipate, and then some stuff surprises you. In China, we had signed up two partners, Qihoo 360 and I think it was Tencent was the other, to help us distribute Windows 10 to their customers. And there was an arrangement where they got to set up defaults and things in the images they distributed. And we thought this was going to work great. We'd get a lot of volume from it, and it really hasn't. We've had to adjust our approach in China. I know it's not really quite what you asked. You asked about developers. I don't think I have a good answer to that. 2040? yes. In 2040, I will do that again. Sure, go ahead. You had your hand up first. What happened with Windows 9? Actually, I'm going to make this the last question because they're blinking on here and somebody's got to go after me. This was a pretty straightforward thing. There was a set of us that were all, you know, we were two-fifths of the way through the process, maybe, or I don't know, a quarter of the way through the process. And we kind of had a sense of what the product was going to be like. We knew it was going to be, our intent was for it to be a big deal. We knew there was latent demand among people who were disappointed in Windows 8. And we just did some basic testing. We did consumer testing with names Windows 9, Windows 10, and Windows Foo, or I don't remember what it was, but it was like a whimsical word. And it was interesting to see the results come back from the testing. And I think the thing that made the biggest impression on us, there was a word cloud of when you told consumers, hey, there's this new version of Windows, Windows 9. And we would describe it. It has Cortana. It brings the start menu back. Here's this new version of Windows, Windows 10. It does these things. The difference in their response in the word cloud between the 9 and the 10 was pretty noticeable. And it gave this connotation in 10 of being, this is something that I'm kind of surprised by and I should look into. And the thing with 9, like the word cloud of 9 had words like next version. And the word cloud of 10 had words like perfect 10. And so there was a kind of a setup in the way people reacted emotionally to the names that from our point of view just was a good tilt. We don't want consumers to think about this as just the next version, especially just the next version after Windows 8, because the servicing approach is different, because we'd like to think it's a pretty significant generational forward step in terms of the platform and what it does. And the name Windows 10 captured that idea better. All right, thanks a lot. I totally appreciate it. Enjoy your time here. Thanks.